Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Well, you could arguably call them the world's most popular football team. Dozens of major cups and titles to its name, millions of fans spread across a variety of nations. They've been called a globally admired empire, and at a net worth of $2 billion, you can understand why. They are, of course, Manchester United. Now, with that kind of following, you can imagine the pressure that would be on the players for Man United. Imagine the expectations of fans and management, the lucrative contracts, the media scrutiny, the intense schedules. All of that would mean that life for a world-class football star would certainly be far from normal. Well, enter chaplain Reverend John Boyers. He's been chaplain at Man United for 18 years. He's provided friendship, spiritual support and advice when the pressure just gets too much for the players, and indeed the staff too. He's in Australia right now and on the line now. It's good to talk to you, Reverend Boyers. Welcome to Open House.
Hi, Sheridan. Great to be with you, and great to be with you on this program.
And I guess we should say right up front that, of course, the success of Manchester United completely falls down on the quality of its chaplains.
It's nothing to do with me. I say this wherever I go around the world. I think the key person in a football club is what we call the manager, the head coach. Mm-hmm. And I think his coaching staff and the players that he develops and brings in are absolutely vital. And I think if managers in the UK are given a bit of support and financial backing and they're given time, if they're good managers, they produce good results. And we've had remarkable results under Sir Alex Ferguson, who's now well into his late 60s and still as enthusiastic and committed as he was when I first joined them in September 92.
And I would suggest that you're still as enthusiastic and committed to the whole role of chaplaincy as you have been since, you've done this for, three-odd decades now, and you've spanned all sorts of clubs, Olympic events and the whole lot.
Yeah, it's been a very interesting journey. I started life as a secondary school teacher, teaching a bit of geography and games, and we felt called to leave teaching and for me to train for ministry. So I went to theological college and candidated to be a Baptist minister in England. And when I got involved with a local church in Watford, God seemed to open up the opportunity for me to become the chaplain. It wasn't something I was particularly desperate to pursue. It's something mm-hmm. that came to me rather than me going to it. And I worked for about 15 years in a pretty successful era when a new chairman, Elton John, had brought in a new manager, a guy called Graham Taylor, and they took the club from the bottom rung of English football through to what was then the First Division. So they were good years, and after Graham Taylor left, I was around for another 5 years or so before Manchester United asked me if I would go north.
Mm-hmm. And therein lies the last 18 years of your professional career. Give us a bit of a rundown as what your job looks like on a day-to-day basis.
Well, first thing I need to say is that I work 2 days a week for them. I am the only chaplain, but I give 2 days a week because I have another role. I work with a registered charity in the UK that specialises in sports chaplaincy, pioneering the whole idea of chaplaincy into the English sports world.
And that's SCORE?
That's SCORE. Mm-hmm. But in the UK, we have about 200 part-time chaplains, most of whom are ordained clergy whose churches allow them to give maybe a day a week, day and a half a week to the local sports club. And it's working well. But Manchester United, as you say, is rather big and rather exceptional. I usually go in most of Monday, and on a Monday I try and visit the two main areas that the club is involved in. Those are the Old Trafford Stadium, where there must be about maybe 350, 400 people working. And then I also go to the training ground at a place called Carrington, sort of southwest Manchester. And I guess there's about 125, 150 people there, including players, who are involved. And a lot of my work there is simply to maintain the friendships that I've established over the years. And that is important, because if people have got issues they want to talk to you about, it's important that they see you and are able to chat to you when they haven't got issues to talk about, if you mm-hmm. know what I mean,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
So you're trying to establish a basis and a friendship. And during those days, I do get people coming up to me and saying, Rev, I would like a chat this week, or do you have a bit of time in an hour or two, you know? And it's out of those informal conversations that you find a quiet and private place, and people begin to open up about all sorts of issues that may be troubling them.
How many players seek you out, and how many kind of keep their distance? I mean, obviously, I'm not looking for names, although that's confidential, but do you find that some are reticent?
I don't actually find any are reticent. I think the advantage of being in a club a long time is that people have got used to you, and that includes the players. They know that you've proved trustworthy, you do deal confidentially with any issues they want to talk to you about, and therefore they're happy to be with you. Plus the fact that some of these players have known you a long time, mm-hmm. so people like Ryan Giggs and Paul Scholes, Gary Neville, the older professionals, knew me when they were youngsters playing for the youth team way back in 1992.
There you go.
And because I was okay with them as youngsters, and I've been okay with them as they've got into the reserves, and then they got into the first team squad, now they're seasoned professionals. They know that I'm an okay person to be with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's those old established players who actually say to the other newer players, not necessarily in word, but just by their acceptance of the chaplain, that he's an okay guy. And when some of the senior pros exhibit that attitude, newer players into the club or junior players in the club are happy to follow and think, well, the Rev must be okay because Gary Neville or Ryan Giggs is talking to him. So it's okay for me to talk to him.
Yeah. And therein lies, again, it's kind of based on that trust that you've built with those players over a long period of time. This is Open House. The Reverend John Boyers is the chaplain to Manchester United. John, we talked about the kind of pressures on the players just in the intro there, just the expectations from the managers, just because, you know, there's huge contracts here. Obviously, a lot of pressure for the players to actually perform, for the team to win, pressure from the fans, from the management, from everybody else. What are the pressures on the players of a team like Manchester United that we don't see? What do you see that maybe we don't even realise?
Well, let me give you two or three answers to that. I think with younger players, we have young players who come to the club maybe at the age of 16, they do a 2 or 3 year apprenticeship. The pressure on them might be, okay, they've got on the first rung of the ladder, but they're now with Manchester United. They're trying to learn their skills as professional footballers. But they also know that in 2 or 3 years' time, the club will review them, and they may give them another year, another two-year contract, or they may say, look, I'm sorry, we don't think you are of sufficient standard. And so young players going through that first 2 or 3 years of almost apprenticeship training face the threat of not making it with the club they're with. Now, Manchester United are very good at saying to players and helping these young players, look, we want you to succeed here, but if you don't, we will try and help you find another club.
Mm-hmm.
That there are clubs at much lower level in England that if you join them as an apprentice professional player and they decide to release you after 2 years, who else is going to pick you up? Someone has said that about 80% of players who get involved in English football as 16 or 17-year-olds are not involved in the game at all by the time they're 21.
Wow.
So that there's the pressure of dropout.
Mm.
Now, if you do make it and you succeed and you get into the first team and you're doing very well, there are many sorts of pressures. Clearly, one of your pressures is to fulfill the requirements that the coaches and management have of you and to deliver on the field. But there are other pressures that you won't see, perhaps. For instance, I can go into Marks and Spencers and buy a pair of socks, and it's not an issue. But one of our superstars, if he were to go into Marks and Spencers and buy a pair of socks, you know, he would be surrounded by people wanting autographs and photographs, and soon a whole buzz of people would be around him. And so it is very hard for them, if you're really famous, to live really reasonable and private lives.
And how do they do that, apart from, you know, living in gated communities and having bouncers at their front door?
Well, I do think they live apart. And to be quite honest, a lot of the guys are really good with the fans because they understand that, you know, they have a responsibility and the fans have made them what they are. And I can remember years ago when we had both Ryan Giggs and Eric Cantona as superstars in the team. And I was at the training ground and training had finished. And both Ryan and Eric started at a line of about 400 or 500 people and worked all the way around it signing autographs. Hmm. And it was about an hour and 20 minutes later when they'd finished. And I talked to one of them and said, that was terrific. And he said, if these people are willing to wait for me, I'm willing to wait for them, you know?
Yeah.
So I think the club try and explain to the players that there is a responsibility to the fans. But I do think there is a problem that some fans can expect too much of players. And,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
it is a very difficult thing to live a private and personal life when you're superstar quality.
Yeah, definitely.
Something I've never had to deal with, I hasten to add.
The other thing, of course, is what happens with professional football, soccer, whatever we want to call it, indeed across a number of codes, whether it be for us, AFL and rugby league or union or soccer, whatever it might be, is the scandals, the drug scandals, the financial scandals, the sexual scandals and things like that. How have you seen the role of chaplains be either a preventative measure or some sort of diffusive measure in those kinds of environments?
The organisation has got real backing from the major powers in football. They put some money into our specialist football coordinator, really. And we are trying to ensure that the chaplains across English, in fact UK football, are aware of some of the programs that can be really helpful to clubs and to players. Now, one of those programs that we've pioneered at Manchester United is a life skills program for young players. So maybe 6 times a year, I will talk with our 16 or 17-year-olds about issues relating to life. One of those would be privilege and responsibility. One would be prejudice. One would be sexual ethics. One would be friendships, you know? Mm. So we're talking about foundation blocks in life. And the club itself is very keen to help and advise and support players and encourage them to keep away from the problems that this world can bring them. And the problem is that the sort of behaviour of some of the folks in English football, you know, could be seen as just normative for ordinary 18 to 30-year-olds, which is sad, but that's the reality.
So how do you handle
but
that?
The problem for the footballer is that if he's a superstar, TV are interested, newspapers are interested, radio is interested, you know?
Yeah. So I was going to ask you, how do you handle that as a minister of the gospel, you know, as a Christian pastor, where obviously there is a mismatch in many ways between the values that you hold to and indeed would preach about on a Sunday, and then the values of a general culture out of which the majority of the players at Man United, you know, or any football team would actually be kind of birthed out of, and then you're chaplain to them. I mean, how do you straddle that mismatch of kingdoms, really, of value kingdoms?
Again, that's a good question, because I think we do have a problem as Christians over to what extent can we impose our specifically Christian values on a society that is particularly a non-Christian society. And I don't feel we can impose those, but when I'm talking about values and behaviour and social and community issues with the young players, I'm always keen to say, look, this is what I believe, that is how I live my life, and I have found it useful because of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And often the players will ask me, well, what would you do in that situation, Rev?
There you go.
You know, how would you react if that happened to you? Because I talk about different scenarios, and if this happened and that happened, what would you do, how would you react, you know? And they pass their comments. But often they throw that back to me and say, well, what would you do, Rev?
Mm.
That gives me a chance to say, well, look, this is how I would react.
Beautiful, yeah.
And that is because I'm a Christian, but actually that may seem a bit alien to you, but over the years I found this to be good and wholesome and helpful.
Yes, yes, that's excellent. And again, that's built on the relationship of trust that you've built with them over the years of just simply dropping by on a Monday and being present. Yeah.
And then through the week, of course, because I pick up all sorts of stuff through the week. So Monday is a drop by day, but through the week I might be doing other different stuff on a Tuesday morning, on a Wednesday afternoon, on a Thursday, on a match day. So I've got a really good contact with these guys, and my hope is that as they see me week on week and through the week, they not only hear stuff for me that I might do in a classroom with them, but they see stuff from me in the way I live, in the priorities I have, that makes them think a little bit.
Yes, yeah. And do you get to pray with many people?
I do get to pray with people. And we've obviously got some committed Christians in the club, and it's good to pray with them. Some people do say, Rev, will you pray about this? Or, Rev, good to see you, I'm worried about my dad, or we've got a problem with the kids, could you pray for that? And if people say that, I genuinely make a note of that, and I do pray for them. And if I see people in hospital, if surgery is needed or there's an issue that they're in hospital for, I always say to them, I will pray for you. Do you want me to pray now, or shall I pray when I get back home to my office? And I'm interested that most people would say, Rev, it'd be great if you could pray now.
There you are.
I think England is still has got a spirituality. It's far less church-going, and people have got no real understanding of the Christian message in many cases. Mm. But there is still a sense of the Almighty in some people that the chaplain can build on.
Fascinating to talk to you, John Boyes. Thank you for your time.
Thanks again. Thanks for having me on the program.
Yeah, Reverend John Boyes, who is the chaplain of Manchester United Football Club. He mentioned before about his organisation that, gets chaplains into the other English football teams. Obviously, if you're interested in English football, you'd love to know his website address, scorechaplaincy.org.uk is the website address, scorechaplaincy.org.uk.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.